DW Africa Link.
China recently rolled out the red carpet for African leaders, from South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa to Kenya's President William Ruto to Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo and many others. On the table were loans, renewable energy, and of course trade on equal terms. But with all the talk of equal trade, who is really getting the sweet end of the deal? That's what's coming up. I'm Kai Nebe. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter from across the continent. Of course, it was inevitable to see Africa-China trade grow. And it has, a lot. By 17.2% annually since the year 2000. China has many friends across Africa, historically and politically, from building the Tazara Railway in 1975 that connects Zambia to Tanzania, to weapons for liberation movements that fought against colonialism. Most recently, the construction of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam and countless mines, stadiums, and roads across the continent. In the past, China and Africa were seen as equal partners. Now, though, China is an economic superpower with global and geopolitical economic ambitions and dwarfs Africa's economic output. So, how have Africa's leaders and China tried to reset relations in a way that benefits both? Over $50 billion promised by Chinese leader Xi Jinping over the next 3 years seems to be a good start. To get a clearer picture on this, I've got DW reporter Tsue Mu, who has been following China's ambitions across Africa for the last few years, and also Ovigwe Igegu, who is an expert on China's interactions with African nations and also the African Union. Tsue Mu, to start off, what was your impression from the outcomes of these deals that were struck?
We have to consider that's not all the donation. It's most of it are credit. And then China does this thing for several reasons. Of course, one reason is that all the Western critics say that China need to expand its geostrategic power into the Africa continent. And then another reason is they are investing into infrastructure, into the mining company, into all the industry that also could benefit Chinese own economy system. Like they need also their own Chinese economy structure upgrade, or also maybe they need, for example, lithium for their own EV industry.
Okay. Now, Ovigwe, I do want to come to you on this. I mean, considering the fact that the balance of trade is actually, you know, Africa doesn't buy a lot of stuff compared to, for example, the EU or the United States. So what is behind the pomp and ceremony that came along with this conference?
If it was, for instance, China receiving EU leaders, I don't think that question would even arise. But you're talking about a continent of 54 countries with relationships that go back, you know, decades. It's not really about just the pomp. It is because, as states, this is how China treats countries all over the world. I mean, you might describe it as some form of as platitude or whatever, but it's a standard. It is the West or other countries that treat African leaders like they're not worthy of the kind of a ceremony that is befitting for receiving a state leader. And mind you, before this summit, in the last 1 year, we've seen a record visit of African leaders go to China on visits. Some of them state visits.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because it is actually stark. I mean, and that's also why I brought it up, because the difference that which African leaders, the attention they receive, and also the willingness of the Chinese leadership to engage with African leaders, like, it's stark, the difference that you see. The lending that has come from China towards Africa has actually increased in recent years. But I wanted to ask, like, is this something that one should be wary of, or is this something that, you know, you actually see as a sign of good economic relations?
Africa as a continent is a developing continent. It has a lot of infrastructure gaps. It has a lot of gaps in terms of untapped potential, economic potential. I'm talking about, you know, in the resource industry, or minerals, in terms of manufacturing. For all of this to develop, for Africa to develop as a continent, it needs finance. It needs investment. It needs to build roads. It needs to build ports. For many decades, they were partners that Africa has worked with. You know, post independence, we saw a lot of collaboration with the European and even American partners. Even the Soviets as well were engaged. You know, China-Africa relation has all, you know, started mostly as a political relationship. When China took over the seat in the United Nations, African countries overwhelmingly supported China. Then we owed China nothing. But this is because of the political solidarity that Africa and to some extent even ideological solidarity that Africa and China have had. This was what the relationship was built upon. If you look at the current dynamic of why China engaged with Africa or providing this type of loans and all of that, first of all, it sees the opportunities in the continent. There have been a lot of success stories. One example is Transsion. Transsion is an electronics company and produces a host of brands. So it has Itel, it owns Infinix. You know, these are smartphones that you might not know in Europe, but are very popular in Africa. Now, Transsion started making these phones in Asia, but it couldn't break through. And they moved and focused on the African market and became a unicorn. This is an example of how a continent that you might look at has not been a place to grow wealth or to become rich. You know, the Chinese saw that as an opportunity, and they got in a unicorn as a result of that.
It is actually quite interesting that, and I want to bring this back to Moo now, is that Moo, in this current context, how important was this summit in the context from a Chinese economic perspective, considering the challenges it has faced regarding trade tariffs in Europe and the United States? Has Africa become more of a zone of importance then for trade?
So China always considered Africa as somehow a backup option when the trade with the United States or with the European Union no more work. And then, of course, you have to consider, okay, the purchase power of from African countries, they are much, 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 much lower than that of from the traditional industrialized countries. So on this summit in Beijing, on this conference between China and African leaders, one trend that that China has now emphasized that we have to China has to export more green technology to Africa, and they try to highlight this one. And then you consider, okay, nowadays the European Union raised tariffs on Chinese solar panels and electric vehicles, and the United States has also raised a huge rate of sanctions on Chinese green technology. And then, of course, China attempts to export these products to Africa as a backup option, but that's up to now only a backup option, because I have also interviewed several Chinese experts, and they said the market volume comparing to Western countries, they are still way too small. Also, and that's also a reason why China is still investing a lot of money into African countries, because they say, okay, if we consider the last 30 years history of Chinese economic success, then people would find, okay, the most purchasing power are still from about 1.5 billion population in the Western countries. And then another big power of purchasing power is China itself. So adding these together, they are only 3 billion of the world population. This is only not even the half. And if China has a huge industrial production capacity, now we are all, the whole world is talking now about the Chinese overcapacity. And then if the African purchase power could be higher through more investment into infrastructure or smart industrial policy, then it would be in longer term, that would be beneficial for China.
And Vigwe, from what Muha is saying there, do you think that that is sort of a wise strategy in the long run, and that will be a strategy that can work?
Yeah, I like the fact that he actually explained it as he did, because it's, you know, very very clear and accurate. Africa is going in the right direction in terms of purchasing power. Right, the population is growing, middle class is growing, and if you compare that to the rest of the world. The rest of the world might have a high purchasing power now, but I don't think Europe's purchasing power in 20 years is going to be higher than it is today, if you look at the trend. But if you look at maybe India, look at Africa, for instance, the political dynamic behind the economic relationship with Africa is more predictable, right? So you can bank on this region. If you can bank on this region politically, then the question is, how do you support its development in a way that also creates, in a way, you make investment into the continent, but that investment into the continent also comes back to you as exports. So, for instance, I think a good example would even be the NEVs, or as we call them, EVs and green technologies. The question is not whether the technology is Chinese or whether it's American or European. The primary question is whether the technology is something we can afford, because we need the technology. Whether solar panels, batteries, or vehicles, that's something that Africa needs. But for solar panels, which we found success in, that has been going very well. But for electric vehicles, it's a challenge. You need to charge electric vehicles. And now, many African countries don't even have base load. If you invest in energy sector, power generation, and you already have a competitive price from BYD, why would an African person buy a Tesla? In fact, the cars from China even look better if you've seen them, right? So the question is a question of having the electricity or the energy base for African countries, for instance, to absorb that the Chinese exports for energy, for vehicles, for solar panels, for other components. I think it's already a done deal.
Right. And Ovigwe, from what I'm understanding, you're seeing this in a sense that this might not be next year or in 5 years, but in 10 years, one will see these results happening. And just from that point of view, do you think that this summit in particular, do you think it marks sort of a watershed moment in trade relations?
From a trade and economics relationship, it indicates that we're going to move even closer. Already the trade volumes are at $282 billion, and it's likely to get even higher, because if you look at the kind of investment that's coming to Africa now, China is also doing a lot more in value addition. Now, value addition added refining of critical minerals. We have that in Nigeria, for instance, 4,000-ton lithium processing plant in Nigeria, by $100 million to set up. In Zimbabwe also, there is also a lithium processing plant there. Even the value of African export to China is now going to increase, which will have an overall positive impact on two-way trade. But whether it's a watershed moment, from an overall perspective, it is. Because if you listen to the language of President Xi Jinping when he talked about elevating the characterization of China-Africa relationship to an all-weather China-Africa community, with a shared future for the new era, it's a very loaded statement, but very, very important. It is very few parts of the countries that you have China use the word all weather. And that all weather also signifies that the relationship will move in a strategic direction where, come rain, come shine, depending on the global weather, you could say a global geopolitical weather, we want to have a very robust and resilient relationship. So that language actually speaks not of strategic direction, but also resilience and how both sides want to build that kind of relationship. This is the overall characterization. But on the bilateral level, all relation, all countries in Africa now have a strategic partnership with China.
And Mu, we have talked a lot about the numbers, and we've not really even sort of begun talking about new Belt and Road initiatives that normally grab the headlines because they're big projects. But do you agree with Ovigwe on that point, that even from the political attitude that Beijing is employing, that even in China, this is being seen as a moment?
Actually, we have to differ from the Chinese official position and also on the, from the normal people position on the social media, because a lot of normal Chinese, they are not very happy about that suddenly new 200 billion yuan for credit for African countries. They are not very happy because, you know, the Chinese economy is cooling down right now, and then also the state media, they have to put a lot of effort into it to explain to people, okay, that's a long-term investment for our nation, that we are somehow trying to integrate all the African country into our own supply chain, and that doesn't work within 3 years, but we have to wait 10 years, then it will begin to give out revenue. So specifically from this summit, of course, the Belt and Road Initiative, that is always a topic on all the Chinese, as recently, on all the Chinese diplomatic relations, with, as no matter with African, with Europe. Once there is a chance, then the Chinese government will never hesitate to emphasize, okay, that's another example of Belt and Road Initiative. Of course, we can never forget that the Belt and Road Initiative is a part of Chinese industry policy, that they want to export the capacity of Chinese industrial production. And when it is possible, then also integrate the supply chain, like we see in Ethiopia, that a lot of local companies are supported by Chinese investors in order to produce something for the Chinese industry.
And then finally, the last question I want to ask to Ovigwe, what Mu has just mentioned, are there concerns about the amount of debt that is going to be racked up? I mean, Kenya, for instance, already like $8 billion in debt to China, and that's just one country. Is it something that is a worrying trend that you see?
Yeah, you mentioned Kenya, $8 billion in debt to China, but that's about 8% of what Kenya's overall debt is. When you look at Africa's debt, you don't look bilateral because we don't borrow bilateral. In fact, China is the only person that borrows, the only state that borrows African countries bilaterally. Like most of Africa's debt is from Eurobonds and the MDBs. Just like Mu mentioned, that they are concerned within China that among Chinese that they are giving so much, preference so much financing. People are worried about their economy. Just like in African countries, there are people on the ground worried the country is taking so much debt. You have to explain these things in perspective and context. Or nobody wants to see its national wealth be exported abroad. But these things, from the long-term perspective, it makes a lot of sense. If African countries can develop, can have more demand and have higher purchasing power, Chinese products is what they will go to, which of course will be beneficial for China as an export driven economy. For 15 years, China has been Africa's biggest trade partner. 15 consecutive years, it's going to be 16 by the end of this year. So it's not money being thrown away. At the same time, you have a lot of African countries who, for decades, they were not able to build projects, ports and bridges, the feasibility study was sitting on shelves, right? Until the BRI came and they were able to have this project completed. These things are challenging, but they have to be done, because all things considered, they are a net positive.
A big thanks to Tsue Mu in Germany and Ovigwe Igegu.
Abuja, Nairobi, Harare. Africa Link's correspondents bring African stories to you.
Now, Kenyan leader William Ruto went to the China-Africa Cooperation Forum, also referred to as FOCAC, with a bit of a dilemma. Last year, Ruto asked China for $1 billion in loans and the restructuring of existing debt to complete other stalled construction projects. Kenya now owes China more than $8 billion. But still, the Kenyan leader said the two sides had agreed to work together on the expansion of his country's standard gauge railway, financed by Exim Bank of China, which connects the capital city Nairobi with the port of Mombasa. Ruto also secured a pledge from China for greater cooperation on the Rironi-Mau Summit Malaba motorway, which Kenyan media has said is expected to cost another $1.2 billion. So, what gives? I found out from Kenya-based journalist Alexandra Williams, who has been following the events unfold closely.
China was a major financier of some of Kenya's largest infrastructure projects, like the Standard Gauge Railway and a lot of roadways. So China has had this ongoing relationship with Kenya that kind of was not on stable ground at the beginning of Ruto's term as president. You know, he came out kind of strong as being anti-China and positioning himself closer to the West. But this time when Ruto came to China for FOCAC, it really did feel like a balancing act. He wanted to criticize China's debt traps in the beginning, but now he's back in Beijing asking them for better loans and to relieve Kenya's financial strain from all of these infrastructure projects. So this approach suggests that he's not picking sides anymore, China or the West, but he's going to play both to see which offers more favorable terms. And this strategy would be much more in line with that of African leaders thus far, you know, seeing China as like a foil for the U.S. to encourage more U.S. investment. The reality of the situation has always been that Kenya relies heavily on Chinese funding, and this trip is kind of highlighting once again how Ruto's pivot to the West might not be as solid as he wanted it to seem in the beginning. Maybe he was doing that in the beginning of his presidency and while he was running for president to separate himself from other leaders and to find an enemy to blame on Kenya's debt problems and financial problems. But now he's seeing the value of having China on his side.
Right. And how appropriate is it for a country like Kenya to actually be on the receiving end of particular renewables here and there? I mean, are these things that could actually work?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that Kenya is already a leader in renewable energy with projects like solar and geothermal. And they're also a key player in Africa's transition to cleaner energy. So this, a partnership with China or, you know, anything that China might be pitching Kenya kind of supports Kenya's environmental goals and further strengthens Kenya's economic ties with China, which are already playing a massive role in infrastructure funding. So, this push at FOCAC basically fits in with China's wider strategy of solidifying partnerships across the continent. But there's also this, you know, very important concern over rising debt. While Kenya needs to transition to clean energy and needs the money to do it, does it make sense to further indebt itself to China as it has over the past, 15 years? China has always made sure to, in its relationships with African countries, make sure that it's a useful partner. So whatever these African countries might need, China always positions itself to be ready. We saw that with how Chinese companies started creating African-made mobile phones years ago. And that's also what's happening with the green energy transitions.
I got the impression that this FOCAC was actually as much about China sort of revealing how much it values the African market, the partnerships it's built. Do you see it that way as well?
I do. I think that this FOCAC seemed to have a little bit more, I won't say pomp and circumstance, but if you look at Chinese media, especially Chinese English language media, there seems to be a lot more articles and a lot more push to talk about FOCAC and how important FOCAC is relative to it, to how it's been in previous years, especially since COVID. I think that COVID really affected China's ability to have these kind of, you know, strong diplomatic partnerships with African countries. We saw a lot of Chinese people and a lot of Chinese industry kind of leave Africa and return to China. And I feel like this FOCAC was China's way of saying, we're back, you know, don't forget about us. We're here to help, which is why they didn't offer debt relief, but they said that they're going to spend more money. So I think that this was China's way of saying, hey, we're still around. Don't look at the other players, pay attention to us. And the last thing I'll say, just to underscore how important it is for China to do that right now, is that India, which is one of China's largest competitors, has been going around to a lot of China's partners in Southeast Asia, you know, saying, why don't you partner with us? And there was a recent incident where the airport was basically bought out by an Indian company. And there's this idea that, okay, you know, at least for China, India is coming around. There are competition in industry, and could they be our competition in diplomatic relations in the future? So China's not the only game around, and they have to show that they're serious.
That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Crispin Wakidio. I'm Kai Nebe.
Minds.